Hello and welcome to another episode of Everything is Canada, Cinelink's podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at stevedunk5 or at everythingcanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Destiny Soria all about her new book, Fire with Fire, which follows teen dragon slayers Danny and Eden Rivera, who were both born and raised to kill dragons. The only trouble is they've never actually seen one before. For the younger Danny, dragon slaying takes a backseat to normal high school life, while Eden prioritizes training above everything else. These differences will only become more apparent when, guess what, Danny comes face to face with a dragon for the first time. Fire with Fire is full of magic, deep dragon lore, something called soul bonding, all through the lens of real-world teenage sisters trying to balance, well, just about everything. We'll talk about sharing the same name with someone else, her trip to New Zealand, her job-proofing obituaries, Fire with Fire, of course, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now, but definitely double back after you've read it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves each time we either engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices. This should be done all year long. Also, June is, of course, Pride Month, so support LGBTQ plus authors any way that you can, either by boosting them online, buying their books, leaving reviews, etc. And again, this kind of support shouldn't end June 30th, so try and be an ally all year long if you can. And lastly, I'd like to mention a new virtual book fest that's happening June 11th to 13th. It's the Pride Book Fest. It's holding its inaugural event and is looking to celebrate LGBTQ plus authors and books. And when I say they have just about everybody, I mean they just have about everybody. Find them on Instagram and Twitter at Pride Book Fest, all one word. They're releasing their schedule daily and it looks pretty darn good. Destiny Soria is an author who writes novels featuring magic, mystery, and an excess of witty banter. She lives in Birmingham, Alabama, where she spends her time trying to come up with bios that make her sound kind of cool. She's getting there, I guess. We'll see. Yeah. She's here today to talk about her new book, Fire with Fire, which we'll get into here in a second, non-spoilery, of course. But first, let's welcome her to the show. Hi, Destiny. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Sure. Did I get your last name right or did I completely butcher it?
Oh, you did fine. You did it much more roly than normal.
Very roly.
I just say Soria.
Yeah, well, I won't lie. I read the part where you said something about you get extra points if you roll the R.
And well,
I
can't, you get those extra points.
Okay, which is, you know, I'll take the win because I'm not one of those guys that can roll my tongue or do like a Chewbacca noise or anything like that. I'm shitty at that type of stuff. So I'll take a win wherever I can get it. So thank you so much for coming on the show. We were talking off air that you're not feeling that great. So I'll do most of the talking. How's that sound?
Sure. Sounds
but,
good.
But first question, I think, in this important one, what's it like sharing a name with an actress who comes up every goddamn time I type in your name on fucking Google? Like, please change. You're staying. We're going to call her and I want to get her name changed.
I honestly feel bad for her because I think that I took over all the like hashtag on Twitter and Instagram. Right. So I do feel bad for her.
Right. Every time you release a book, her agent's like, you're getting a lot of buzz lately. I don't know what's going on.
One time I was at a job interview and at the end they were like, you know, there's somebody who has the same name as you who lives like in California. And I was like, yeah. And they were like, she is a very risque profile. And then they just like stared at me as if there was something I was supposed to do about it, like it was my fault that they confused me for her. I was like, well, I can't make her change her name. I'm not going to change my name. So, you know, we're just going to live our lives separately.
That's a weird thing to say to you.
It was very
to somebody
strange.
Who, right? What's that like? Yeah, like what are you supposed to do about it? Like they want, like were they implying that you should be more risque? Like I don't get it.
Who knows?
So I couldn't help it. So I did look up her. Okay. So Destiny Soria is all, there's an actress, Destiny Soria. And I just couldn't help myself. I had to look at her IMDb page and she's been in movies such as Toilet Zombie Baby Strikes Back and Brides of Satan. What else? What you got coming out?
I think they're producing one called Christmas Slasher.
I just saw that she
I
plays.
know this because I get tagged in a lot of things that are not for me.
Yeah, she plays Alita Claus in Christmas Slasher. We're not laughing at this woman, her career.
No,
I'm not
good
making
for
fun of
her.
her.
No,
I'm not
she's
making
doing
fun of her,
great.
but she has a ton of credits to her name. I'm telling you, she's appeared in a lot of things, but it definitely
She is living la vida loca over there. I got tagged
yeah.
once in this tweet that was like, had such a great party with so and so and so and so in Beverly Hills, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, I wish I'd been there.
That should be a movie. You guys get to you'd swap or something, right? If this was some comedy or even maybe even a weird thriller thing. But yeah, just looking at her, like she obviously leans towards sort of slasher type horror things. So just looking at these titles, they're pretty funny, some of them. But Wolf Trap, yeah. Hollywood Pussy Trap, Kill Kill. Anyways, so not the same person. We've
No,
established that, so we
I
can
that
write
is
out.
not me.
Anyways, but yeah, so that was just kind of funny because when I was just doing my due diligence, and every time I type in the name, it's like she comes up, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not the same person. All right, here's a weird thing actually that we do have in common. I was reading an interview with you, and this jumped right out at me because when I was a kid, I also wanted to be a marine biologist. And when I found out how hard it was, I said no. And when I decided to change careers at the age of like 8 or 9, I also
As you
switched. I
do.
wanted to be an archaeologist as well, since you.
That's amazing.
So are we okay? So we're either twins separated at birth, or we're just close in age. We just grew up watching the same things. I don't
Watching the exact same.
know.
Well,
Yeah.
did you think that marine biologists just played with dolphins all day? Because that was my
Okay,
understanding
so
of it.
instead of dolphins, it was whales.
Okay,
Yeah,
yeah.
it was playing with whales all day. I didn't realize it was like boring stuff, like looking at coral reefs and sampling water and like looking for, yeah.
Well,
No,
you
it
know
was.
what's funny is like you grow up and you're like, oh, well, I'm not gonna do any of that weird science stuff. And then now as I'm an adult and it's kind of too late to do any of that stuff, I'm like, I feel like I would have been good at that. Maybe
Oh.
not the biology, but possibly the archaeology.
Yeah, well, and I mean, for sure, it would have, that seems like a really great thing to pursue, especially if you're creative, if you ended up being a writer, right? I mean, because that's such a great thing to have in your back pocket for being a storyteller. But I've thought about it a lot. I ended up getting like I'm scuba dive and stuff like that, right? But
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I have thought about it since, and now that I'm old and shitty and I don't like my job, and I'm like, I should have been a marine biologist. I'm just like, it would have been so cool. But
Yeah,
that's
you
just
kind of have the midlife crisis of
a little
just.
bit, right? Yeah. And it was one of those things where, but it was just, I'd like, oh God, it just seemed like when you talk to anybody that knows anything about anything, they're just like, it's like a lot of schooling and you gotta do that. I was
Just
like,
so much science.
you're right. And I'm like, man, I think I'll just read. I'm just gonna read books instead.
Gonna read and think about how great I would have been at
Right, exactly. I'm gonna read a story about a marine biologist. And it's because I do love reading, obviously. And if I had just read marine biologist books, I maybe would have been a marine biologist, but here we
it.
are. Another cool thing I liked, it says that you backpacked through New Zealand after college for a very long time. So that says two cool things to me. Number one, obviously you like Lord of the Rings, and number two, that's you've carried that into your work. It's in this book, right? It's in Fire with Fire a little bit. So talk to me about that. How was that?
I mean, it was amazing. It was,
Yeah.
I decided after college I wanted to take a gap year to decide if I wanted to go to grad school or not, which I'm glad that I did because about halfway through my gap year, I was like, I do not want to go to grad school.
Oh, right on.
But yeah, we just like just we were in a caravan with a Kiwi family for a while. They had like 10 kids, I think, is what they were up to when we were with them. Drove around the little caravan, did not shower for long periods of time. I petted lots of sheep. I stood on a lot of mountains with my arms outstretched.
Right. How many
I
Lord of the
went
Rings?
to
How many
a
Lord of the
lot of
Rings?
Lord of Rings
I was going to
sites.
say how many Lord of the Rings, or I was going to say how many Lord of the Rings quotes were spoken.
A lot of
A
them.
lot
I
of,
feel,
yeah.
well, I haven't even
Yeah.
seen the movies in so long, and so
Right.
I probably don't even remember any quotes, but we went to a lot of the different sites, like the touristy ones, like
Right.
Hobbit Town, which was
Right.
amazing, but also like little known places where it's like this one scene at this one part was filmed here and it doesn't even look like it because it was mostly green screen, but we were there. We
Right,
stood
right,
there.
right. There was a giant screen here. Yeah. It was a parking lot. You're like, that.
I mean,
Yeah.
basically.
Well, that sounds really cool. And we'll mention it again later. But yeah, it did sort of come up in this new book. I also read, I'm doing a lot of reading about you. Are you still an insurance agent?
Not anymore.
I was gonna ask if you've made that switch to a full-time author.
I left the insurance biz last December, right
Okay.
before the pandemic hit,
Right. Good.
and started writing full time.
Okay.
So did that for a year, and now I am working part time as a proofreader. I proofread obituaries for funeral homes,
How's that?
which is exactly as
As it sounds, probably.
cheerful and wonderful as it sounds.
Right. Well, okay. Well, so first of all, congratulations on quitting the 9 to 5.
Thank you.
And was that always the plan? Because I've talked to authors who have no intention of quitting their full. Like I talked to one author not that long ago, and she's a stewardess, airline stewardess, and she's like, "I love my job. I'm never going to quit it. I only work like 3 days every couple weeks. I have tons of time to write. Like I have no intention." She's like, "I got benefits." She's like, "I have no intention of quitting."
Lots of authors love their day jobs or
Right.
at least like them enough that they don't want to quit them.
Right.
I tried real hard. I was in office job for 9 years. And at the end of the 9 years, I was like, you know what? I tried almost a decade now to like it.
Yep.
And I can't make myself like it. And I feel like after a decade, I'm not going to magically wake up one day and be like, ah, I love driving in and sitting in a cubicle for 8 hours a day. So at that point, I was like, you know what? Screw it. Let's make the leap. And it was extremely difficult, but very rewarding. I realized, I learned a lot about myself. I learned that I like being self-employed. But also, this new part-time job's really nice to have a little bit of a structure there. So
Sure. Right.
I'm just kind of in the point now where I'm just feeling my way through it,
Right on.
seeing how it goes.
Well, that's really, really, really cool. And that's, it takes a lot of guts. So, kudos to you for that. Like a lot of
Thank you.
people wouldn't be able to do that. Right. So,
It was scary.
yeah,
I mean,
I'll
it took me
bet.
9 years to get up the courage, but.
You know, if you had to stay another year, I bet the insurance game would have grown on you.
Yep. It was just, I just
Yeah, who
needed like
says
a
that
couple
after?
more weeks and I would have woken up and be like, ah, insurance is my true love.
Yeah, who's that person who after like 9 years is just like, I'm starting to like this insurance game? Probably not too many people, I would imagine, but not if they had another option, right? But yeah, no, honestly, kudos to you. It takes a lot of guts, and I mean, there's a lot of people toiling in a cubicle right now who should have, could have, would have, right? So, good for you to make the take that jump, make that leap of faith, I guess. But it's our benefit because we get to read your great books now. And so, okay, the obituary one, yeah, that's a different one. I've never met anyone who wrote those. It's funny, you've read a lot of them, right? You just think you never given any thought to who writes them or who proofs them. But so what's that like? Just like, what's, is there, give me a lesson on on that business. Is there rules? Is there structures? Is there a word count? Like what's the.
Yeah, we have some general rules that we follow. Lots of the we work directly with the funeral home, so I don't have to interact with anybody who's grieving, which is
Right.
nice.
Yes. Yeah.
But we have certain rules that we have to follow. Most of it is just like make sure their name is spelled correctly,
Right.
obviously. Make sure
Yes.
their date of birth and date of death is correct. These are the
Yes.
things that you want
Very
to be
important.
correct.
Yep.
I
Yep.
mean, most of it, because people now it's really popular to have like bookmarks or, the really nice programs, or, we do like promotional like fans and mugs and tote bags, which I personally would be a little weirded out if I went to a funeral and got like a tote bag with the person's face on it and date of death. But
That's not
some
something I
people
would,
really
yeah.
like it. And I don't know, there's something really nice about knowing that you're giving these people something that they're going to cherish after the fact in
Sure.
years to come, something that they can keep in a scrapbook or something, and just knowing that it's everything is spelled right and the commas are all in the right place, which would it means a lot to me, might not mean a lot to them, but
Well, I'm sure. I mean, yeah, well, we can imagine it. Like, it's obviously, especially like maybe a comma, an Oxford comma might not bother them so much. But, I mean, imagine getting the name. Well, it wouldn't even make it that far, though, if the name was wrong, I assume, right? That's what you're,
Oh, you'd
that's
be
what you're,
surprised. Yeah,
oh
you would be
no,
surprised. I mean,
oh
well,
no.
the number one rule that I was told at the beginning, because like at the end of, I mean, if you've ever read obituaries, you
Yeah.
kind of know this, that at the end of most obituaries, there's sort of the cherished memory section, which is when it's like they leave behind to cherish their memory, and then it lists all of their relatives
Yep.
that they want to list.
Yep.
Most important rule is that you cannot change the order of anything
Right,
in
right.
that section because they listed them for a reason,
For a reason.
either the in order of who the deceased liked best or who the person writing the obituary likes best.
It sounds like you've made this mistake. Is
I have
that
not, but
Oh, okay.
I was given the speech about it, and I was like,
Okay.
okay, not gonna make that mistake. Do not want anybody. Well, it's funny because you get ones that are like, so and so leaves behind her loving and beautiful daughter, so and so, and her daughter, so and so. It's
Oh
like,
no.
we knew who wrote this obituary.
Ouch. Yeah. Right. You ever gotten anything weird, or is it all pretty sort of standard fare?
There's weird stuff sometimes, and then there's we get a lot of people who immigrated here, especially from Jamaica and Haiti,
Yeah.
which are just because of the funeral homes that we work with. So that's always really interesting to read their obituaries and
Right.
sort of see the kind of really interesting and difficult lives that they led. And when it's somebody who lived to be like 90 years old and had a rich, full life, it's not a sad thing to.
It's right. I mean, they've seen a lot of shit. They've experienced a lot of life. Yeah. So it's time to cause for. I mean, well, listen, my dad died a while ago and years ago, and we were talking about that all the time. Like, I'm like, other cultures celebrate death. Why are we, it was always strange to me how, it's just this, we do everything we can to keep them alive, number one, and right, and whether, and that, tons of pills and treatments and whatever. And we're just so afraid because we're so afraid of death, right? It was something even at a young age, I was always questioning. I'm like, why are we like this? You know what I mean? It's such a weird, that's it's it is a celebration, right? You should be happy for that person. They're getting to, if you believe in that stuff, move, go to the other side, right? Or whatever.
Yeah,
Or
I mean,
if you're like me and you don't think there's anything, then they don't know any difference. So it doesn't matter, right? So
yeah, I was raised evangelical Christian. I'm not religious anymore, but
yeah.
sort of in the past like 5 or 10 years, I've been trying to sort of reconnect a little bit with my dad's side of the family, which is Mexican. And one of the traditions that I really love is the Dia de los Muertos celebration, which I do a little. I like to go to the local one that happens in Birmingham when I can. Obviously, cannot during COVID, but I like to build an abbreviated version of an altar for my loved ones who have passed, and I just think it's such a beautiful thing to treat their memory as something to be celebrated, and to also to take that time every year to purposefully remember them.
See, yeah, I'm an atheist, and I know I was born to be one because I was that, and I was raised Roman Catholic, and I was always that kid, like asking too many questions, like why is this the way? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I was born to be an atheist. There's no doubt about it. But I really appreciate what you just said there, and it's like, well, where I look at something like that and I think, well, I wouldn't do that because I think the dead are listening to me necessarily, or anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. Or that they are somewhere else, but just that, yeah, it is nice to remember the person they were, and just celebrate that life again. That's okay, right? There's nothing, you know, I get that and I appreciate that and I like that.
Right.
That's a really nice.
Yeah, in the same way. And I think that and funerals and things like that, it's for the living. It's not for the dead. And
right.
You know, the living are just as important, and having those memories to cherish can be a really healing and wonderful thing.
Just like a wedding is for the guests, not for the bride and groom.
Right.
Two people having the least fun at their own event. Yeah.
Although if you like look at the like Bridezilla stories and stuff on Reddit, sometimes it's hard to believe.
I was just talking to another author, and she's Muslim, and we were talking about her nikah, and she had 1,000 people there. I was like, holy.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I was like, imagine that receiving line. I'm like, I've been to some bigger ish Italian weddings and stuff, like 500 people, but 1,000 people. That's crazy.
Oh man. Oh no, that's too many.
She's like, it was nuts. She goes, she's like, you don't even know most of the people there. Yeah. Right. So anyways, it was pretty, we were having a pretty good laugh about it. Okay, sorry for asking so many questions about that. I'd never met an obit writer before, so that's
now kinda, that we've talked about death and dying.
Let's talk about being killed by dragons. Okay, well, anyways, before we definitely get to that, so you're 3 books in now though, and counting, but I do want to sort of talk about Thief, Liar, Lady in a bit. I know there's not much to say, but I do want to just read the summary because it sounds really cool. But how are you feeling? 3 books in, you're working on, you know, you got Thief, Liar, Lady for sure. And I think that was a 2-book deal. So there's mm-hmm. another one coming at some point. How are you feeling about just as a writer, as a storyteller, like as your skills? You feeling confident? You feel like you're getting better each time, or?
It's such a loaded question because for me, I know a lot of authors like this, like every time I start writing a new book, it's almost like I feel like I go back to like level zero, where I'm like, I don't know how to write a book. What are characters? What is plot? I don't understand how dialogue works.
Right.
I'm just going to sit here and stare at this blank page for an hour and wonder how I managed to fool everybody into thinking that I know what I'm doing.
Right.
And you'd think that once you get like 3 or 4 books in, you would no longer have occasions to think, I just tricked everybody into thinking that I know how to write books, and somehow managed to trick them into giving me money for them and publishing them several times in a row. But I still occasionally have to be persuaded by my friends that that's not the case. I did not trick anybody. I am not going to be called out as a fraud at some point of like, now we know you're not a real writer.
You're a ghostwriter. Yeah, yeah. This is somebody else's. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, there's always that weird feeling, but it's also it's so exciting whenever I can kind of get past that feeling and
right.
You know, seeing the books on like my shelf at home or anytime I see them in bookstores, it's because when you write your first book, you're writing it for just yourself. There's nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always kind of this question in your mind of like, this could be it. This could be the only one. Like,
right.
Like I could get this book published and then never again. And so you really like savor that experience. And then as you get more and more books, you're like, okay, maybe this can happen. But it also gets scarier because now you're sort of writing with the weight of your readers' expectations on you. And you have in your head sort of all the nice things people have said, but also all the mean things people have said about your books. And that can be sort of an extra burden as you're trying to like keep writing. And of course that just keeps exponentially growing with every book.
Sure. And like, I mean, and there's nothing anyone can say positive or negative that will change the way you feel like at 2 a.m. and, you know, you're staring at a deadline or whatever, and you're, you know, you're feeling down or up for whatever reason. Right. I mean, life just has a way of getting you down too. Right.
So, right. Yeah.
You know, there's nothing that can ever change that feeling, but, you know, I'm wondering if though, are those moments, you know, there's always self, you're always going to have self-doubt. We all do. There's nothing, right? If anyone says they don't, they're lying.
You're lying, right? Yes.
So, but, you know, it's, do you ever find yourself in those moments just sort of like falling back on and relying on just, because there is a mechanical aspect to storytelling, right? Like there's rules. Mm-hmm. There's of course creativity, which, you know, which is in, you know, inherent, right? You have it. I don't. That's why you're an author and I'm talking to authors. so, you know, in those 2 a.m.s when you're not, you know, maybe when you're feeling a bit stifled, do you find yourself it like muscle memory in a way? Do you find that that saves you, or do you have a sense of that at all now? Because again, you're, like I said, you're a few in at this point, right?
Yeah. You know, it's, I mean, the thing that's true about writing is that you do get better the more you practice, even right. if it doesn't feel like it. You do. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I've noticed a lot, and I noticed it again when I was writing Thief Liar Lady, was, which is my adult fantasy, that because I had written it, and then I was like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna try looking at like one of the plot maps, you know, that you can find online,
right?
Because, you know, most genre books follow a pretty typical rise and fall when it comes to the beats of the plot.
Yep.
I was like, I'm gonna use that and then fix my plot to make sure that there aren't any weak areas of like, oh, nothing's happening for 10 chapters. And it's always very surprising and then very gratifying when I compare it to mine and find that I sort of instinctually can hit those beats.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a pantser all the way, so I don't plot ahead of time. So yeah, like you said, it's sort of a muscle.
You're
memory.
A Danny.
Like I just know I am. I sort of know instinctually now, having, you know, been writing since I was 16, to that, you know, when certain things need to happen and when there need to be downbeats and, you know, when there need to be cliffhangers. And, you know, it's not to say I don't need to be edited, because I do definitely need a lot of editing.
Right.
But yeah, that's always a gratifying experience, sort of looking and be like, okay, I do actually know what I'm doing for the most part.
Well, that's what I mean. Like there's a skill involved, right? Like there's,
yeah, definitely.
There's a mechanical is maybe not the best word, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's structure, there's rules, right? Like, yeah. Like A, you know, A leads to B, B leads to C. Right. So, mm-hmm. So that's, you know, like I said, I've talked to people before who are like, when I'm feeling creatively dull, I rely on that muscle to push me through. And it's especially when you've got a deadline looming and you've got no choice. you've got a day to write 100,000 words, or what, you know, and you've just got to push through, right? So they just go into that place in your brain, right? That author brain, and you just do it. And but anyways, yeah. So it's always like to talk, because I've talked to people, you know, like even debut authors who are, you know how this works. By the time I'm talking to you, you're already worried about your next book or editing it. And mm-hmm. they've said that, like, they've already noticed, you know, they're getting better at certain aspects of the physical act of writing, you know.
But, yeah, definitely. I think the emotional stuff can always be hard, but the structural aspect definitely gets a lot easier.
Right. And I think what separates the really good ones from the not so good ones is, like, from my point of view anyways, is like, you know, I can, if I'm reading a book and after the first chapter, I know where the whole book's going to go or end up, you know what I mean? It's like, that's what separates, I think, the good books from the not so good books. Whereas sometimes it takes me till the last chapter to know and sometimes I've even read the book and I still don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And some people think that, like, it's bad to.
No.
The reason that those structures exist, and there's, you know, there's more than one, there's several different variations.
Yeah.
Like, the reason those exist is because that's what we expect in a story. And that's what keeps our attention.
Right. Of course. And it's like, and if it was any different, our brains just wouldn't be able to process it. Right.
Right. So. And, like, you know, you read books sometimes where it's like, you feel like it just drags on for all of eternity and nothing is happening. And if you tried to fit that book into the plot structure, you would find that it didn't fit. And that's why it's dragging on forever.
That's why I always say too, like, I'm a big cinephile, and I talk about movies all the time with people, and they're like, well, films are subjective. I'm like, well, not 100% they're not. Like there are technical aspects to filmmaking and structure that like have to be there, right? Like, so it's, you know, I think that way about books a lot. So, you know,
yeah, I took some film classes in college.
Right.
Loved looking at, you know, and I think that helps with writing fiction too.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of understanding the way that cinema works and what captures your attention.
Absolutely.
And what bores you.
Right. All these things are in, like you said, they're tried and true methods, and they work chemically in your brain subconsciously to the either the audience or the reader, right? Like, and a lot of times we don't even realize it. It's happening to us. And it's like that horror frequency, right? Like that 4 hertz thing, that low humming in a horror film.
Yeah.
It chemically makes us uneasy, right? It makes us nervous, and but you can't even hear it. It's not even audible, but it's that low drone that makes a human uncomfortable. You don't even realize it's happening, right? So it's a really cool, I like that even with books too. I like that when I'm being led down a certain path and you don't realize it until you've hit the mark, right? It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's always a great feeling. Yeah.
And I mean, there is something to be said about, you know, you always have to look at it through the lens of like, okay, but I'm looking, you know, I'm American. I write from a Western perspective, right? And there are different storytelling traditions.
Oh yes. 100%.
From different, you know, yep. And I'm not qualified to speak to those. And so I do get upset when people are like, this book doesn't fit our exact structure, so therefore it is bad. And it's like,
I've thought of this idea a couple months ago too. I've mentioned it to some other authors and they think it's a good idea. I'm going to start reviewing Goodreads reviews.
Oh my gosh, yes.
and it won't be pretty.
And I love that idea.
And it's going to be just the ones that are just like did you even read the fucking book? You know what I mean? I'm just like, mm-hmm. What? Listen, you don't want to like a book? Fine. Critique it. You know, you want to critique it? Fine. But, you know, like you said, critique it through the proper lens, right? Like, mm-hmm. Understand storytelling before you. And you know what? If you didn't finish the book, don't fucking put anything on Goodreads.
Oh my God. I hate that so much.
I have a strong... I'm anti-DNF. Like, I'll finish... Unless I'm offended by the book, it tricked me and it's a secret racist book or something. I don't know. Right. Like, unless it tricked me.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of those out there.
There is. Oh, I know. But like, you know, I'm a kind of a weird thing where I actually tend to research a lot. I'm also like these guys that I like spoilers for movies and stuff too. So I end up doing a lot of reading about a book before I read it. So I pretty much know what I'm getting into. And because of social media, we know which authors to avoid. Right. But
mm-hmm,
don't, if you didn't finish a book, just shut your mouth. You got no business fucking saying anything about it in a public space that could affect sales for that author.
Yeah, like if your friends ask you, tell them, I didn't finish it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Therefore, that's my opinion. I didn't finish it.
That's not an opinion, right? Yeah. And like, but don't go to a public space like Goodreads that you know people go to get recs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just don't do it. Anyways, I'm getting mad. You're making me mad, Destiny.
Sorry.
No.
I mean, I try to stay off of Goodreads, although I do use it for keeping track of my books and
things. Yeah, no, for sure. And I use it too, right? But it is, you know,
I stay off of my Goodreads.
Don't read. Yeah, it's not for authors, right?
It's just for the readers.
Yeah. But I've just read some wild stuff on there and it just makes me angry. But anyways, on to something much more enjoyable to talk about, like dragons and sorcerers.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have you had a chance to practice your elevators pitch, or do you want to me just to read the summary?
Why don't you read the summary? I'm gonna pretend like I'm sick.
You know what? You are sick, and I shouldn't even have asked you. I should have just went right into it. All right.
It's not because I'm bad at them. Definitely not.
No, of course not. It's because you're sick, and I'm a nice guy. Danny and Eden Rivera were both born to kill dragons, but the sisters couldn't be more different. For Danny, dragon slaying takes a back seat to normal high school life, while Eden prioritizes training above everything else. Yet they both agree on one thing. It's kill or be killed where dragons are concerned. Until Danny comes face to face with one and forges a rare and magical bond with him. As she gets to know Nox, she realizes that everything she thought she knew about dragons is wrong. With Danny lost to the dragons, Eden turns to the mysterious and alluring sorcerers to help save her sister. Now on opposite sides of the conflict, the sisters will do whatever it takes to save the other. But the two are playing with magic that is more dangerous than they know, and there is another, more powerful enemy waiting for them both in the shadows. That's promotional language, I guess. Is there a heart to this book that maybe that's not in that you can mention without spoilers? Is there something that's important to you that you want, you hope people understand about this book?
I think for me, the relationship between Danny and Eden is a really big part of it, and the just what it means to sort of come of age and start to have to decide for yourself, mm-hmm. What your morals are going to be, what you're going to stand for, what you're willing to die for, the people that you want to have your back. And I think that's something that teenagers, that hopefully will really resonate with them. And then also just, you know, anybody who has a sister or I guess, you know, a brother too, any kind of sibling, mm-hmm. There's always it's such a complex relationship. Even if it's a really good relationship like Danny and Eden have, there's still, there's so many levels and layers to it. I have a younger sister.
I was going to ask you if you had a sister because, go on anyways.
But yeah. I do. I have a younger sister and I will say this because I do not think that she will ever listen to this, but she's younger than, she's 4 years younger than me, but I was jealous of her. I was growing up. I was the quintessential nerdy, quiet, shy, awkward kid. Mm-hmm. And my sister is very just popular, outgoing, you know, beautiful, wonderful person. Yeah, we hated her then. And I was also the middle child. I have an older brother.
Okay.
And so that kind of added on this sort of
middle child thing.
Yeah. Also younger sister who gets all the attention. And that's a big thing in the book is that Eden feels like Danny, that everything's coming easily to Danny. And
right.
On the flip side, Danny is doing everything she can to impress Eden because she looks up to her, but they're both so caught up in their feelings that they can't see where the other one's coming from. And that's something that I really wanted to illustrate because it was something that I didn't realize until me and my sister were both older and out of college. And now she has two kids, my beautiful niece and nephew, and she and I we get along great. We now love her. We no longer hate her. and being able to have talks with her as an adult now, you just start to realize like how different things were than you could necessarily see when you were young.
Right. Well,
and I'm hoping that this is something that teenagers maybe who have siblings can read and say, perhaps I too am a little blinded by my own feelings.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So you're bang on. The sister, I mean, listen, it's not a spoiler or a secret. They're on the cover. It's in the summary. This book is about sisters. It's about sisters, right? And, you know, whether it's dragons or clowns or I don't know. I can't think of anything. Sorry. Their relationship is key. It's at the heart of this book for sure. And so what's interesting about them is, yeah, they're both very different, obviously, like we talked about, but you know, they're both so self-aware and they're both very unflinching in their self-awareness, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, all of, you know, Danny, yeah, wants to impress Eden, but it's internal, right? It's not, she never outwardly expresses that to her. And if she had of, well, there wouldn't be a book. there's no drama, but, they're both, yeah, they're both great that way for sure. Are you more like one or the other? Cause I mean, you could almost say Eden is left brained, Danny's right brained. You know, Eden is tough, determined, you know, suffers from anxiety and panic attacks, which by the way, I thought you wrote so great. You know, in this book, I thought you handled that with a lot of care and a lot of thoughtfulness. So Eden is all these things, this desire to be perfect. And Danny is more like a normal teenager, right? Little loosey goosey, a little carefree, like just, yeah. You know, lazy, right? Sleeps in, not a morning person. That comes up a lot.
Yeah. She wants to hang out with her friends.
Yeah. It's like more of an American teen, I guess. So, yeah. For lack of a better thing. So are you more like one more than the other or just a split down the middle or?
I definitely have way more in common with Eden than I do with Danny. Like I said, I'm the older sister. I I am glad that you think that I handled the anxiety and panic attacks well, because I've been dealing with anxiety since I was a kid, and
Yep.
only recently diagnosed as an adult. So it was different for Eden, because she's already been diagnosed. She takes medication. She sees a therapist. She's
Yep.
dealing with it in a healthy way, which I think is also really important to show. But yeah, I, especially when I was in high school, but also now-ish, she's very sort of one-track mind. She's a perfectionist. She wants to be the best at everything. And that was me when I was in high school.
Right.
I wasn't good at, I mean, she's the best at jiu-jitsu and mountain climbing and stuff. That was not me. I was not good at any of those things, but I was more on the academic side. I needed to be the best. I needed straight A's. I needed straight A pluses.
Sounds awful.
Well,
No, I listen, I know a lot of people like that.
when
Identical,
you're the
yeah,
middle child,
right.
you
No,
gotta pick something that's gonna be your weird obsession.
sure, yeah. But I mean, that's and this is where obviously it becomes unhealthy, right? When
Yes. Mm-hmm.
it gets to the point where you're causing yourself harm, whether it's mental, emotional, physical. I mean, the thing with Eden too is the idea here is there. Yeah, there's a lot of sort of self-determination that comes in this book too, right? Like this path was chosen for them by their parents. It's almost, they don't get a choice in it. They're dragon slayers, whether they like it or not. And Eden's trying to be the best goddamn dragon slayer that ever lived,
Exactly.
and Danny just wants to like hang out, watch movies about dragon slayers rather than be one. It's
Right.
essentially
Yeah.
right.
Play some Dungeons and Dragons.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like, so, I'm definitely more like Danny. I would have hung out with Thomas and Danny and those for sure. But anyways, but yeah, no, Eden pushes herself so hard. It's, she does, she causes, she damages herself her mentally, emotionally, and physically. Right. 'Cause she just can't stop. And then even when she's hurt, she hurts herself training and stuff like that and getting the Penelope out of the tree. She hurts herself too. It's a hard read in that sense. And I'm going to tell you, Eden was my favorite character in this book, hands down. And I loved her arc, and we can't talk about the ending for her, but I thought her ending was fucking amazing. I really love the way you ended that with her.
Thank you.
There's a bit of a
Good to
clue.
hear.
If anyone listens to this, we've already dropped a bit of a clue early on what she ends up doing, but in a way, but she was really great. And although again, I would have hung out with Danny if I had been around at the time, but you know what I mean? So it's just, that's what I was
I
doing. I
think
was playing Dungeons and
Danny is
Dragons.
more
I was,
fun to hang out
yeah,
with, let's be
that's right.
honest.
Eden's well,
Eden's no fun.
right. And that comes up in the book, right? When she, Eden runs into some old classmates and stuff, and she was the stuck up one, or the all
They thought
business.
she was in a cult.
Right. Yes. Yeah. She was all business. Right. But, anyways, so yeah, the sisters are everything in this book, and I really appreciated that, and really like the way you wrote them. And again, especially Eden, I thought Eden was lights out. I think you really hit a high mark with her. But let's kind of walk back just a little bit. So, just talk about where this idea came from, Fire with Fire, for the story.
For me, it really started with the sisters, like when I sat down to write. It's something that I'd been wanting to do for a long time, was a sister story. And so for me, it kind of grew out of their relationship. And when I'm writing books, a lot of times the way that I get my premises is that I'll be like, I want to write about this completely normal thing, but what if there was also this other thing? So for me, it's like, what if there's two sisters who are very similar to me and my sister, because that's what I want to write about, but also dragons.
I'm going to complicate it even more. This the normal
Dragons
sister relationship with dragons.
with
Yeah.
dragons, and then we'll
Yeah.
add some sorcerers, and
Okay. It's an interesting premise. This you establish that, this has been around for a long time, and it's contemporary, by the way, if anyone doesn't if we hadn't mentioned that yet. So but it's you establish the history into not just the dragons and dragon slang, but the sorcerers as well. Been around a long time. There's not so many dragons anymore, so it's like the business of dragon slang is kind of boring. It's just especially for these girls who have been training their whole life but haven't even never even seen a dragon.
Right.
So until this book, there's a really cool thing in this book that I like that you did with, it has to do with Nox and Dany. And so you do this thing called soul bonding. Mm-hmm. Talk about where you came up with that idea, because that's really cool.
That one's actually
explain what it is first, and then okay.
Okay. Well, soul bonding is when a human and a dragon were born at the same time. They have what's called the soul bond, but the soul bond doesn't really snap into place until they sort of find each other. And this isn't a spoiler. I mean, it's pretty,
it's on the back cover. Yeah.
Dany and Nox end up finding each other. And, while they are trying to kill each other, realize that they have this soul bond because it sort of snaps into place when they touch for the first time. And it creates a bond that is telepathic mostly, but they also can share emotions, which for me created a really interesting thing to play with of it's... I mean, I feel bad for Dany because I feel like the whole book is just things that she didn't want happening to her, and then she has to deal with it. So she didn't want to be born a dragon slayer, but she was. She definitely did not want to be a dragon slayer who now has a soul bond with a dragon, but now she does, and it's not something she chose, and it's not something that Nox chose either. But now, like, her emotions, her thoughts are all sort of shared on this open link with a dragon, which she thought up until it happened was an enemy. And so, there's sort of this idea that dragons have a shared history when they're born. So Nox has all the history of the dragons that came before him, which means that he has all of the emotions of that past history. And dragons, of course, have been hunted almost to extinction. So you can imagine that's a lot of big and complicated emotions that now Dany has to contend with, although in small doses, because Nox is better than she is at controlling what gets passed through the bond. It's a fun mechanic for exploring how you can connect with somebody who is fundamentally different than you are.
Right.
And obviously Nox is not a human, but a dragon, but has emotions, has goals and hopes and dreams the same way that humans do. And that's something that Dany has to learn. And she learns it by being connected to him in this intimate way.
Well, it's about empathy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's about learning to care, like you said, for somebody that different from you or isn't like you, or, you know, because once, you know, it's once you're inside somebody's head and you have, you know, you're privy to, like you said, all their thoughts and emotions. And in this case, this is where the book sort of has, you know, a lot of people are going to love this relationship, obviously. And you wrote, you know, I think you wrote it this way with Nox, like there's a lot of levity, right, in this exchange, because it's a funny dynamic, because you have Dany.
They're both like sarcastic assholes, which is super fun.
Right. But then there's this a lot of misunderstandings, because you have Dany, who's now privileged to centuries of, like you said, conflict and loss and emotion and just all that weight that comes with learning something like that all at once, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Nox, who's now privileged to the brain of a teenage girl living in the United States.
Just as complicated.
Right, but for completely different reasons. And so, you know, I don't think you need to be a genius to figure out there's comedy there. in some situations, mostly when it comes to just sort of like understanding language, you know, like the language modern teens use and different sort of references and things like that, that Knox doesn't quite pick up on and, it's there's some funny moments there. So that was good. You got to explore that part of it too, because, you know, this book has a lot of drama and conflict in it, but it's kind of a light read in the sense that like it kind of reads younger in a way to me. It's almost middle grade-ish in a sense, right? Like there's this magical quality to it, besides the actual magic in the book.
Yeah, I think of it as being the youngest book that I've written.
Right.
Which, you know, I say that, but then it's like, okay, but there's also like a lot of like torture and death and
there
violence.
Is, yeah. Yeah, that's why I said that. It's kind of weird.
You a middle grader.
Right, right. No, for sure. But you know what I think you know what I mean. Like it just sort of has like this. There's moments of levity and whimsy and stuff, and it just, you know, I think you balance.
It's definitely a little more of a, and a lot of that comes from just like the fact that it's contemporary fantasy,
right?
And the fact that it's a little bit of a, I don't know what the right word would be, a little bit of a corny concept, you know? It's like, ooh, dragons in America, and yeah. For me, a lot of the fun was like playing with that and saying, you know what? Yeah, dragons in America, let's do it.
Yeah, for sure. The point I'm poorly making is, you know, you just found this really nice balance, I think, between, right, not taking it too seriously, but taking it seriously enough. Because, yeah, there is definitely some moments in the book that are scary and dramatic, and there's conflict and violence for sure. So I don't want to make it sound like it's a good time all the way through, but
good time was had by all.
Exactly. Yeah. They're just buddies at the end now. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of good characters in this book. You know, I got to say though, you know, for the supporting cast, I'm a big, big Aunt Frankie fan, but, I got to say, like, I love the relationship with Danny and Eden and their parents, but like, they're the worst parents ever. We agree with this, right?
Yeah, they're not. Yeah.
They're well-intentioned.
They're parents.
Right, right. They're well-intentioned, sort of. And yeah, I don't doubt that they love their children to like would die for them, right? But it's, you know, by bringing them into this world and then they kind of just take off for some sets up like not
yeah, and they're I gotta not go hunt a dragon for a while
peace. Right, and they're not always in communication, so but that leads to, and you're right to call that out, because that actually leads to actual problems, the fact that they're, you know, they're out of communication, which, so it's a plot device, so it's smart.
Yeah, and Danny points out at one point, like,
right,
and she gets in trouble for breaking curfew, and she's like, right, okay, so I'm not allowed to be late for curfew, but it's cool if I want to go like shoot a sniper rifle out in the backyard.
Right, right, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We train in a barn with a huge dragon skull. But
whatever you do, yeah, don't be late.
Don't be late, yeah. And clean up your room. That's the, again, sort of the levity part, right? Like, is where you could see it's kind of a funny, the you know what I'm trying to say, duality of it. Like, you've got, yeah, the, you know, the serious with balanced with the not so serious. So it's a good time. Really great, fun read overall. Like I said, I really loved Eden to death, and I loved her relationship with her mom too, quite a bit. It's a push pull thing there, right? And I really appreciated it, and I really love Eden's arc. Was this ever pitched? Was this always pitched as a standalone?
Originally, my editor talked about it being a duology, but after talking with my agent, we just decided a standalone would be
okay
better.
I think it works both ways, to be honest with you. I think
there could be a sequel. Yep. I wouldn't be opposed to writing a sequel, but at the time when I wrote the book, it needed to be a standalone.
Understood. Fire with Fire comes out June 8th. Buy it if you can. Your next book, I know it's 2023, it's a ways out, but it just sounds too cool not to mention. So Thief, Liar, Lady, what's that about?
Thief, Liar, Lady is my debut adult fantasy. Mm-hmm. So kind of dipping my toes in the water over there. And it is a Cinderella reimagining in which Cinderella and her quote-unquote evil stepfamily are actually grifters who are trying to con their way into high society.
Very cool. And I'm like one of these guys that's fully on board with this like Disney revisionist stuff that's been happening the last couple of years. And you know, Cinderella has come up a couple times. Like Cinderella's Dead. I don't know if you read that book by Caitlin Buron. It's
I
fantastic.
haven't, but I've heard wonderful things about
It
it.
is fantastic. So I'm all on board with this stuff. You know, I'm not a Disney purist, and I don't give those older stories, the films and the books before them, a hard time because, you know, they were written in the times in which they existed, right? So I'm not gonna like sit here and bat. But I also very much enjoy that this, you know, each generation is like, they're like, here, you take a shot at it, right? Because there are themes that are universal in these stories, and a good writer can make a good story out of that, I think, with and update it with a modern lens and you know, just sort of like pick and pull the stuff they like and really twist it into a story that's really palatable for today's audience, I think. And that's why I brought it up, because it really kind of sounds like that's what you've done with this story. Is that the
Yeah,
idea?
it's what I hope that I did. I definitely tried to sort of take the kind of structure, but also take a lot of the things that I think are problematic about the original
Right.
tale. Original being more Disney, the actual original tale
Right,
is
right.
kind of bonkers.
Yep,
A
yep.
little bit harder to pull from.
Right.
But yeah, so I took that and I really tried to not only update it, but sort of look at it from some different angles, through some different lenses, and just pull in a lot more about gender roles and relationships and bigger things. There's a conflict between two countries. There's looking at religion, colonialism, bigger things like that that are a little bit easier to tackle in a more,
Fairy tale-ish setting, yeah.
and you know, it's when you're writing YA, for me, it's about YA needs to deal with those things too, the big heavy questions, because there are things that teenagers that they deal with, and that you know they deal with racism and sexism and colonialism and all of that stuff as they're getting older. But for me, it's the distinction between YA and adult is about the way I explain it to people is I think of YA as always having a little bit more of a hopeful slant at the end because teenagers are still growing up, they're still deciding who they're going to be and what sort of changes they're going to make in the world. Adults, it's a little different. Not that it's too late for us, but
Well, I
that a
mean,
lot of us have made our choices and are now
right.
having to live with them. To take a fairy tale, which is typically a very neat and tidy moral tale, and say, okay, but what if we blow the morals out of the water and make everybody a gray moral character?
Right. Well, that sounds really cool. Obviously, it's a while away. So, but we'll definitely keep an eye out for that one. Destiny, what do you got on the launch day? For Fire with Fire, what do you got going on?
I am going to be doing a event, a virtual event with Astoria Books in New York with the author Amparo Ortiz,
Nice.
who wrote Blaze Wrath Games, which is
She's
another wonderful
it is a dragon
modern dragon.
fest. Yep.
I was in conversation with her on her launch day, and so I wanted her to be in conversation with me on my launch day so we can just keep talking about dragons forever.
I love it, and she's great. She's great on panels. She's just it, like her big, beautiful smile, and
She's
she's got
such a wonderful
so much
human.
energy.
I love her
And
so much.
yeah, she's great choice, great choice. And yeah, she is a you are with a fellow dragon expert. So, I haven't read the Blaze Wraith was great. I haven't read the follow up one yet, but it's on my list.
Haven't either. I guess I have an in. I should probably get
You
the
could probably
arc.
get one if you tried. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Destiny, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. I know you're sick, so I thank you for sticking it out with me. I do greatly appreciate it. Have a wonderful launch for Fire with Fire. It's listen, everyone, look this book up, figure out how you're going to get it. Bookshop.org is always a great spot if you don't know where to go. But obviously, if you've got an indie shop that you can get to safely, please do so.
I should put a plug in
Oh,
here for my
yep.
indie bookstore. If
Do
you
it.
order from Thank You Books in Birmingham,
Okay.
the address is thankyoubookshop.com. com, I think.
Thank
just
you.
Google thank just, you books Birmingham.
Thank you books Birmingham, and you'll find it. All right.
Yeah, and you order through there, you can get a signed and personalized copy from me.
Oh, lovely.
Always they ship great. Anywhere in the U.S.
Beautiful. That's a great, that's a good option too. Yeah, that's the big thing. A lot of these places, if they don't ship to everywhere where people are, it can get tricky. And we try and keep people away from the pandemic profiteers if we can around here. So,
yeah.
Well, that's great. Okay, so Thank You Bookshop in Birmingham, and launch day with Impero. Can't wait. That sounds great. I'll be there. I'll be the one asking you dumb questions, so you know it's me.
Awesome.
Okay,
I look
Destiny,
forward to it.
Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Destiny for chatting with me. She wasn't feeling that great, and I greatly appreciate her taking the time to talk. Fire with Fire is a fun read that kind of has a little bit of everything. Dragons, of course, lots of magic, bad guys and girls, romance, an honest look and anxiety, and much, much more. It's out now, so head on over to DestinySaria.com to order one now. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to CineLinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.